You work hard for your money. You should be rewarded for that. That's why so many people are switching to Consumers Credit Union. Member-owned, Consumers offers tremendous advantages, like earning up to 5.09% APY for doing things you're likely already doing. Plus, you can use any ATM anywhere, and Consumers refunds the fees. It's no wonder Consumers Free Rewards Checking is recognized as one of the best high-yield checking accounts nationwide. Account qualifications apply. Signing up is a breeze at myconsumers.org. Consumers Credit Union, federally insured by NCUA.
Today's reality has forced us all to grapple with what's important and what isn't. And what will always be important is family and health. Unfortunately, snoring, sleep apnea, and nasal breathing problems have a direct impact on those two things we hold close. Living with any one of these issues compromises your quality of life, and that affects your whole household. It's not always easy to take action to change that, but Advent is going to help with a free virtual consultation. There's no cost and no commitment, and you don't have to worry about insurance or missing work to find out if Advent can solve your problem. During your virtual consultation, you'll chat one-on-one with a sinus and sleep specialist to find out exactly what you need to know. Text the word ADVENT to 797979 to schedule your free, zero-strings-attached virtual consultation. I'm Dr. Madhan Kandula. We won't be able to do this forever, but we're doing it now, because ADVENT knows when you breathe well, you live better.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, this is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. Sports Radio 670 The Score, our radio.com sports station, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by U.S. Water Heating Solutions. They service any type, tank, tankless, or boiler system for homes and businesses.
What's your name, son?
Danny Bernstein. I'm from Deerfield, Illinois.
Dan Bernstein on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's enough. Don't care. Not interested.
Insightful sports talk for your workday from one of Chicago's most respected radio professionals.
Professional what?
Professional penis.
You don't know what the hell you're doing!
Dan Bernstein.
The guy is full of hot air.
In a semi-permanent state of flatulence.
Middays on The Score.
We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And man, we are packed today on our very special post-Last Dance airing Bulls Monday. Jason Heyer, the director of The Last Dance, is scheduled to join us in just a couple of moments. We are going to talk to Chris Chelios of the Blackhawks, an interesting concurrence for the heyday of his Hawks career, playing in that same building. Plenty of Bulls stories from him as well. Marching out. Analyst for NBC Sports Chicago will be at 10. Bill Cartwright, former Bulls head coach, will join us at 11 o'clock. And Lou Kanellis, sports anchor of Fox 32, who was up close and personal with those Bulls teams, is going to join us as he always does at 11:20. I'm Dan Bernstein. Will Perdue is alongside today, as he has been on these Mondays. 312-644-6767 is the number at WSCR The Score. You want to email? You can email Bernstein. score.com. That's where you listen to us live. We stream at 670thescore.com. Text the text zone, which is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. When you do, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein670. He is at Will_Perdue32. My personal account is at Dan_Bernstein. Also, download the radio.com app. You can stream The Score on your mobile devices. Interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. Jay Zawoski is our executive producer, and Ray Diaz, the executioner, is the man on the board doing what he does. So, Will, that was 2 hours of some of the heaviest, most serious stuff, both with the 98 team and delving back into some difficult and controversial past. That was pretty good filmmaking, I thought.
I think it was outstanding. You know, it was very interesting, and you always wonder about, you know, when a producer or a director says, hey, wait till you see who we have next week. But I think there was a lot of truth to it, because remember, MJ had final say on this, and it'd be great to our first guest, Jason, to find out exactly what he wouldn't allow in there, because he basically showed who the real Michael Jordan was. I mean, I was impressed that he allowed that to be shown, because that's what we dealt with, and any player who played with him dealt with on a daily basis. That was Michael Jordan. That was the guy that wanted to win at all cost. And it didn't necessarily make him look like a great guy, but at the same time, those of us that played with him, it took a while, but you figured it out. Don't take things personally. This is just about one thing, winning.
Well, it seems like what you sign up for. That's the unspoken nature of the contract that we learn is implicit in all this, is you're going to win, but it's not necessarily going to be fun. The payoff, that's why the celebrations, the parties were so intense, was because it wasn't fun to go through all of it. And the fact is that we are used to now, and fans now in the NBA are used to the regular season feeling probably as casual as it always should have. And it wasn't like that when he's playing 38 minutes a night for 82 games, which is just, it's astonishing how seriously teams took regular season games.
Absolutely. There was no such thing as load management. You know, I heard a stat the other day, and when Michael came back from baseball, he didn't miss a single game in 96, 97, or 98, because that was important to him. The part about, if you're willing to spend 3 hours of your day to watch me, I want to make sure you get me at my best, but I also want to make sure you see me play every single night.
You know, it's interesting, too, that it wasn't talking about his father that made him take a break. It wasn't talking about some of that intense personal stuff that made him put a block up. It was talking about himself as a player. It was talking about, if that's the way I play, if you don't want that, then you don't have to play with me, that kind of thing. That's when he shut things down. It was really telling, and it was hard to interpret what his emotional circuit breaker was there, whether it's a realization of a pathology, or whether it was maybe a desire to have done it differently, or feeling, maybe understanding how hard it was for his teammates. I don't know what it was. But why he shut down at that point is it's interesting to think about what happened.
Well, just from playing with him and getting to know him, you know, even more so after I finished playing with him in Chicago, I think it was just a reminder to him emotionally how hard it was to be him, to constantly be at that level. And I'll tell you this. You know, we've talked about on Mondays, you know, about Michael. And I talked about how, and I said it on The Last Dance, you know, in 91 when he was crying, holding the trophy with his father next to him. You know, we didn't see that. What we saw was the anger and frustration. Those are the emotions we saw. And as I've learned over the years, he was very jovial with us at times, on the planes, on the buses, but never emotional like you saw last night where he stood up and said, all right, cut, I'm done. We didn't see that because of the fact that I think he, and this is old school thinking, obviously, thought vulnerability was a weakness. Now, we also know that when you allow yourself to be vulnerable, that's also a strength. But back then, that's not how you thought. And I think he's still as old school as they get. And he still doesn't care whether you like him or not. But what he wants you to understand is the sacrifices that he made personally, professionally, but also the commitment that he made to being the best, which, as everybody has been watching, is not easy.
There is a theme that is running through this series, and it's not just Michael. Like you say, it's something about a certain generation, perhaps, of pro athlete, whether it's Isaiah, whether it's Jordan, whether it's Pippen last night, which I found somewhat astonishing, no one apologized for anything. No one. And when Scottie Pippen says that it was weird because he said he understood that refusing to enter a playoff game was wrong. But then he said, I probably would have done it again the same way or something to that effect. And I thought, well, how can you think that? You know, what is it about the mentality that has somebody thinking things like that. Why wouldn't you want to go back and change something that is on the negative side of the ledger? And any one of us, anyone who's ever done something in professional life, personal lives, it's because we're not afforded those opportunities that, you know, makes us who we are as human beings. But to say that really surprised me, that no one in this apologizes for anything.
And I was surprised by that as well, because Scotty apologized to us as a team after that happened. But to hear him say, especially when he's being interviewed, that he wouldn't do anything differently, I was stunned by that, because I don't know if it's a toughness factor, if it's, you know, he felt like he needed to send a message. I'm not really sure, but I'm curious if we, you know, if we could talk to him now, even after watching that, if he would still say the same thing. I know I wouldn't. I would have said, hey, I know I've made a mistake there. And I don't know if it's a sign of weakness. I always find it interesting, Dan, when people talk about their careers or they talk about their personal lives and they talk about how, well, I wouldn't do anything different because of how it turned out. But I always think about hindsight's 20/20. I'm willing to admit I made a mistake. I'd love to have the ability to go back and correct that mistake, because then how would things have turned out if that wouldn't have happened? I understand we won the game, but at the end of the day, that was the wrong thing to do, and that was not how you handle it. But I thought we, and it started off with Bill Cartwright, and I'm glad we have him on today, the speech he gave to us about, you know, the opportunity that we're screwing up here because of how we're acting and how selfish we're being. Because when it's all said and done, you have to put the team above yourself. You have to think about, what does it take for us as a team to win? And if that means sacrificing personal glory, then you have to do it. But most times you find out or think about that after the fact. They always say hindsight's 20/20. So I was really surprised that he said he wouldn't change anything, but I've also, you know, heard some whispers, and, you know, hopefully when Jason comes on, we can ask him about, you know, how Scotty
he's
is made
here
out.
Here right now.
Ah, very nice.
In fact, just the timing is ideal as we welcome Jason Hayer to the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Jason Hayer is the director of The Last Dance, and he joins us on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Dan Bernstein along with Will Perdue. How are you today, Jason?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well, and every day we give thanks to the content gods, and I guess we could be pouring libations at your feet for providing us with sports content in this day and age. Was the initial plan to double up on the episodes as you have, or is this just because of our times that this was sort of the best way to handle everything?
No, it would have been two episodes per night, but it would have been on the off nights of the finals. So this was scheduled to premiere on June 2nd, and then I think the finals began on June 4th, or were supposed to begin on June 4th, and then it was going to be every other night. So they were checkerboarded throughout the finals, but it was always going to be two per night.
You know, we talked a lot about sort of what we're watching, about the nature of the storytelling. And we heard what Ken Burns said, and I know that you and he had talked since. We spoke with Andrea Kramer at length about how she viewed this per the standards of HBO Sports, etc. And I heard you say this. You said, what I do is journalistic, but I'm not a journalist. What we do is tell stories. So what I'd love to know, what's the difference?
Well, it doesn't mean that we're any less honest or truthful, but I think that when I said that we do things that are journalistic, but we're storytellers, any sports documentary is going to go through the filter of first of all, the league in which the subjects played. So if it's MLB, NBA, NHL, NFL, MLS, any of these things have a governing body, and you're licensing footage from those governing bodies, so they're going to have editorial input. Now, you know, I've been through this process many times with the NCAA and any governing body. There's going to be a back and forth. and they're trying to protect their brand, but you also hope that you're dealing with people at whatever governing body it is that understand that you need to tell all sides to a story and be comprehensive. And so that's what I meant by, you know, the standards for PBS are much more stringent than the standards for an HBO or an ESPN. PBS, if there's any underwriter of a project that has any connection to that subject at all, they are immediately disqualified from being an underwriter on the project. When Ken Burns and I spoke, he was telling me about some projects he had done, and it was like a third cousin of you know, Henry David Thoreau or somebody, and all of a sudden they couldn't be involved with the project because they were related to the person. So their standards are a lot more stringent than ESPN's, but it's not like we're not telling a responsible story. I think that Will could tell you when he watches these things, I hope he can tell you that we're trying to be as accurate and truthful as we possibly can. And, you know, I think the criticism that's prevalent is, well, Michael gave permission, so he's going to have final say on these things. That's true. It's also 100% true that he never once pushed back on anything, either on or off camera. He never said, you can't ask me about this. He and his team never said that. He never said, you have to take this out of this cut. I don't like this. The only notes that he gave were to add a couple of things in, and that was to add more color to the story. Like, for instance, you saw last night that buzzer beater he hit against the Hawks in between the Indiana and the double nickel game during the 95 comeback. He saw the initial cut, and we went right from Indiana to Madison Square Garden. And he said there was a game in between there where I hit a buzzer beater, and that's when I knew that I could be my old self. So we added that in. Those are the kind of notes that he was giving, but it certainly wasn't to police the truth.
Jason, I will say this, and people keep asking me, you know, how accurate is this? What's going on? Is this really true? And I said, you know, they've done a really, really good job of depicting what it was like to be on those teams, to play with them. So I want to congratulate you on that. But I wanted to ask you, you said I'm surprised that Michael was going to allow some of this material, meaning what's coming up in episode 7 and 8, to be released. Why did you feel like he was trying to protect an image? Or when he told you you guys could play that with no qualms, you made it sound like you were stunned.
I was surprised. You know, I never spoke to him at all during the process of the making of this. I just assumed, you know, you might have the most inflammatory moment in episode 7. You call him an a-hole. And, you know, I thought that he might bristle at that, or that his people might say, okay, like, this is over the top. You don't need to call him an a-hole and a jerk and show him behaving this way. One clip can do it. You don't need to show three clips. But even, you know, he's calling Joe Klein, you big fathead MF-er. I mean, there are things that we put in there, like, all right, let's see how far we can push this. And they didn't take anything out. So that's when I said I was surprised. I just went into this entire process expecting the worst and hoping for the best. And when I say that, I mean expecting it to be really policed. And you know, Michael has an image that's been crafted over the course of decades. And I know that people protect that image. It's worth a couple of $1 billion. So I was afraid that we were going to, there's going to be people a lot more over our shoulder and policing what we said and how we said it a lot more. But episode 7 is, you know, the proof is in the pudding, that there's a lot of stuff in there that, yeah, I'm sure must have hurt to hear. Maybe he laughed when you probably called him an a-hole to his face a couple of times, I'm sure. And you know Michael better than any of us do. So you would know what he would allow and what he wouldn't. Maybe you're surprised that I was surprised because you know Michael well enough and you know that he would have no problem with people expressing those kind of opinions.
Well, I will say this. I remember when I got the phone call and was asked to do this, and I thought about it and I said, listen, and I did my interview in February of last year, 2019, and I said, we're old enough now that we can look back on this, and if these guys are going to do this correctly, we have to be honest. You know, we're not trying to convey some type of image. And if people don't like what I'm going to say, then there's always the adage, well, sometimes the truth hurts. But that's just how he was. Now, I've learned and accepted that and appreciated that to all levels as I've gotten older because of how it changed me and how much I gained from playing for him and playing for the Bulls. But I was curious with you, A, the idea you had going into making this, because you already had that footage from the NBA, But B, how many times did you change direction because of what you were getting and the valuable information that was coming in from these individual interviews?
That's a great question, and it was the interviews that drove the creative process here. We knew that, that footage was going to be the backbone of this whole series, and that's why it's called The Last Dance, and that's why everything is seen through the lens of that 97-98 season. But without the honesty and candor of guys like you and all of your teammates, we're not having this conversation because I think that it wouldn't have resonated with anybody. If you want to go see highlights of Michael Jordan and the 90s Bulls, you can go to YouTube and there's, you know, roughly 6 million clips you could sit there and watch from now until the end of the year. But in order to actually tell the story, you needed the kind of honesty that you brought. You know, my favorite, I think my favorite anecdote in the entire series is the one that you told about the dollar blackjack game. I think that says so much about not only Michael, but about you and about BJ, and just you with, in telling that story, it was so vivid. You put us on that airplane with you guys in telling that story. And that's the one where you said, why do you want to play with us? We're playing a dollar a hand and you're playing for thousands in the back of the plane. And he said, it's not about the dollar. It's about your money in my pocket. And that's Michael Jordan that I've come to know in my research. That's him to a T.
Did he ever say to you, did he ever say to you, this isn't good enough? You need to ramp it up here. This isn't what we've talked about.
Yeah, not indirectly. As I said, I never spoke with him, but you know, all of the partners in this are perfectionists, and that includes me and my team as well. But there is a sense of, you know, 9 out of 10 is not good enough. I remember we got a note back from someone on his executive team that episode one, it's good. It's an A, but it can be an A+, and here's how we should do it. And we just had ongoing talks. It took us, you know, over a year and a half to get episodes one and two locked in. And that's because we had that much time. If this thing was going to air next year, we'd still be editing one and two and still be trying to hone it and perfect it as much as we can. Those things were only done because they were due at the time. It's not because we felt, all right, this is perfect. We always were honing things, and that comes from the top down. It certainly is an attitude that he has about anything he's going to be involved in. It's you do it the best all the time, or why bother doing it at all?
Last Dance director Jason Heyer is our guest here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Dan Bernstein alongside Will Perdue. When we see that moment, when Jordan says break, when he's talking about his philosophy and essentially his ruthlessness, and he says he needs a break, what were those emotions? What's behind those bloodshot eyes at that moment? Is that a personal realization that maybe he didn't like about himself? Was it just a manifestation of overall intensity of emotion? I'm still trying to I couldn't determine exactly why his circuit breakers tripped at that moment. What do you think happened?
It's a question for him, of course. I can't speak for him, but I think that you can glean some knowledge out of the question that spawned it, and that was that I was curious in my brief interactions with him. He was a nice guy. He was very respectful to me, to our crew. He couldn't have been a nicer guy when he was around us. Now, I understand you're going to be polite and professional, and it's not like I'm friends with him. But I was interested in a guy who seems normal, and, you know, he's kind of a ball buster. He liked giving it to the guys, and we gave it back to him, and he just likes being in settings like that. He seemed, you know, quote-unquote normal to me, especially for someone who's a global icon. He was pretty down to earth. And I wondered if it bothered him that the first thing people thought about him is, you know, intense, insatiable hunger, drive to win at all costs. And, you know, when I would mention to people that I was doing this doc a couple of years ago when we were first starting out, they'd say, oh, you're going to talk about when he punched Steve Kerr, when he punched Will Perdue, you're going to talk about didn't he get suspended by David Stern, wasn't he responsible somehow for his dad's death? There's all kinds of rumors out there and all kinds of you know, aspersions that people have cast. And I wondered if that bothered him. I think that he gets passionate and emotional about two things, his family and winning. And he takes both of those things so seriously that they're paramount to everything else in his life. And he is adamant that everyone had to go through what he went through to get those titles. It took 7 long years for him to win that first one. And Will can tell you better than anybody how much that affected him and how much he needed that. So I think when he talks about his passion, it makes him really emotional because there's that fire is still there inside of him. So there's moments in this thing where you can see the old MJ come to life, and that was one of them.
Jason, what was your initial thought when you were like, okay, I'm going to do this, and this is, I got to try to take the personal out of it, meaning this is what I think about MJ. But as you're going through this and as you're constantly going through these hours and hours and hours of tape, you just mentioned normal, down to earth, intense, win at all costs, family and winning, but what have you walked away from thinking, I didn't know this, people didn't know this, and they're going to be stunned to learn this?
Maybe not stunned, but I didn't know how hard it was for you guys from season to season. Everyone knows it's difficult to win a title, and any good coach will tell you that it's harder to win back-to-backs than it is to win the first one. But it's easy with 20 or 30 years of hindsight to say, yeah, they were the best team in the 90s. Look at the roster that they had. They were incredible. They had Robin. They had Pippen to go along with Michael. They had Phil Jackson, who's one of the best coaches of all time. They had a fantastic supporting cast. I think when you examine it year by year, you see how often it could have gone off the rails, especially during that second three-peat run. I mean, they were exhausted. They were lucky. Not lucky, but they were fortunate that it didn't go to a game 7. In 98, because I don't know if they would have won that game. But I think just the drive, the commitment, the hard work that's necessary to do it year after year after year. You know, Pat Riley talks about the disease of more, and that when you win one, everyone wants more adulation, more credit, more money, more playing time, more power. And so to keep on coming back year after year and keep that same formula where everyone knows their role is very, very, very hard to do. I don't think that you'll ever see 6 championships in 8 years in the NBA ever again. So what I came away with it was just having such a profound respect for you guys and how hard it is to do year after year.
If right now you could sit down with Jerry Krause and have as many hours as you wanted to square the circle of this story in any way, what would be your line of questioning? What would you want to know, and how would you want to know it?
I'd love to know how he would articulate the perception of him is in the public, what he thinks people think of him, and why that is correct or probably why that is incorrect, how he's been cast as the villain in this. I would want to know from him what regrets he had and what he would stand by from what he did. And how he acted in the 90s and the, you know, the decisions that he made. You know, I think that he will never get enough credit. And it's a shame that he only got it when he's no longer here. You know, when someone wants credit that much and it's so transparent, people are reluctant to give it to them because you're not supposed to openly say, well, I did this. But he's no longer with us. And I think that he should be, his family and his friends should be immensely proud of his accomplishments. You know, Michael was there when he got there. Every other piece, he put that into place. So, you know, they are quite simply not there without Jerry. I firmly believe that. Michael clearly was the straw that stirred the drink. He is the guy that he's the alpha and the omega in the Bulls universe. But without Jerry's expertise, we're not having this conversation. So, you know, I wish we could have sat down with him because I had so many questions for him. But the main one would be why? Why do this? Why go to Phil Jackson before a season and say you can go 82-0 and you're still not coming back? Why drop that hammer the first day of training camp? Why would you enter a season with casting that pall over your team? What was it that you were so passionate about that made you say that you would want to blow this thing up that you had built? So it would have been fascinating because Jerry's a smart guy, and I'm sure he would have had a lot of answers for me.
Jason, listen, we have 2 more episodes left. And I think, again, you guys have done a great job. What happened with Scottie Pippen in the huddle happened, and I think it needed to be in the documentary. But I wanted to ask you, as a guy that played with Scottie and maybe this happens in episodes 9 and 10, I don't think, and this, I'm not trying to be too critical, but is there something that's going to happen in 9 and 10 that really tells us how good Scottie Pippen is? Because, you know, you can't include everything. You know, you're seeing on Twitter, people are like, listen, I wish there were 100 episodes. But, you had to cut some things. Was there some stuff about Scottie that you wish you could have included more of, but because of a time commitment you didn't? Or is there something coming up in 9 and 10 that give him the necessary credit that I think he deserves? I know in 1 and 2, Michael talked about without Scottie, there is no Michael Jordan winning 6 championships.
Mm-hmm. I think the answer to those questions both is yes. Yes, I wish we could have done more for every player. Ron Harper, we barely even got to mention in this series, and I think that Ron probably didn't get a fair shake in this because we just didn't have the time. Tony Kukoc, we could have done a lot more about him and all the challenges he had when he came over, you know, language barriers to European ball to NBA pro ball is really hard, and he had a very tough few years when he first got over here. So there's a ton of stories that I wish we could have told. I will say that Scottie's toughness, you're going to learn a lot about that in episode 10, and I'm proud of the job that we did, and I'm immensely thankful to the NBA for the way that they covered game 6. They had cameras everywhere, and Scottie was in and out of the trainer's room for that entire game, and he was a decoy for the entire game in game 6 against Utah. He could barely move. Anyone who's pulled their back out, even playing pickup ball, knows that it's debilitating, and it knocks you off your feet for days at a time. And Scottie was playing with a pulled, wrenched back that entire game. He was having back problems for months going into the game and was getting treatment right up until tip-off. And then the first play of the game, he dunks. And when he comes down, his back goes out. And you can kind of see that heel-toe walk that people do when they could barely stand up when their back is in spasm. He was in spasm for the entire game, and he grit his teeth and he played through it because that's how valuable he was as a player, that even as a decoy, he attracted enough attention on the court that it gave Michael the space to operate. So, you know, I can't say that if you're disappointed that Scottie didn't get his due, that you will be satiated once you see this thing. But I can say that we did all we could to show just how tough a competitor Scottie is, and you'll see that next week.
Jason, last question. Really appreciate you being generous with your time today. You mentioned you would ask Jerry Krause about regret, and it's a very heavy word, especially when we're talking about, like you say, 6 trophies, and we get this sense of the ends justifying the means. But I'm noticing a theme in a lot of this is a lack of regret. It's unapologetic stances from Isaiah Thomas, from Jordan, from Pippen, even for refusing to come in the game. He acknowledges it was bad, but doesn't say that he would do it differently. They come close to remorse, regret, apology, but never quite get. What is it about great athletes? What is it about how this becomes, how their story becomes so much of who they are, that there's never a sense of, yeah, I would have done that differently, or yeah, I kind of feel bad about doing that. I shouldn't have done that. Nobody apologizes for anything in this.
I think it's pride. You know, these guys, as I mentioned before, the level to which you have to work is staggering to get to where these guys were. This is the pinnacle of their sport. These are the best on the planet in the NBA. You know, Michael, when he told that LeBradford Smith story, said that the lesson he learned was that on any given night, anybody in the league can go off like that, because if you make it to the league, there are bench warmers, but there are no guys who aren't world-class in that league. So a guy like Scottie, who has made it to the pinnacle of that league, coming from where he came from, I think he's got an enormous amount of pride that he was doubted his entire life until he got to the NBA. And indeed, when he was in the NBA, he still was doubted. He was still kind of the Robin to Michael's Batman, as Mike Wilbon said in the doc. So I think it's very difficult to look back and say, yeah, I regret that. I should have done that differently. That takes someone that takes honest regret from your heart, and it takes a big person to admit that. So maybe he didn't regret it at all. And maybe a lot of these guys don't regret that stuff. I think that Isaiah as he said, we would have done it differently if we knew what the backlash was going to be. But that's not the same as regret, as you pointed out. So I think a lot of these guys are proud men, and they got to where they got through hard work and through sticking to their guns, and it's difficult for them to act any other way.
Jason, we are just enjoying the hell out of this, and I wish there were so many more episodes. I know we've got a couple left, and maybe left over for a follow-up at some point, but it's all wonderful stuff. We appreciate it, and certainly appreciate you joining us today. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, guys. And, Will, thank you so much for the time that you gave us. I vividly remember that day where we did the interview, and I remember it was freezing cold in that room. So thank you for giving us the time and sharing that stuff with us. It was invaluable.
I just want to say thank you for using those quotes, because, you know, my son's 16 years old, and you're helping me gain a little street cred with the teenage group.
Anytime you need some of that, give me a call. There's more where that came from.
Jason, thank you very much.
All right, guys. See ya.
That is Jason Hayer, the director of The Last Dance, that's been airing on ESPN. When we come back, we're going to get some stories from somebody who shared an arena with Michael Jordan concurrently during this time. He was captain of the Blackhawks and some pretty damn good teams. Chris Chelios will join us next on Studio 670, The Score.
NFL football fans, let The Score hook you up while you're keeping safe at home as we air NFL Classics featuring some of the biggest games in NFL history starting tonight at 7.
Join us for Super Bowl 51, New England versus Atlanta, featuring one of the greatest comebacks in Super Bowl history.
Brady gets his hand, pitches out wide, gets a block, he dives, it is a touchdown! New England wins in the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history.
Starting tonight at 7 on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's sports station, a production of Westwood One Sports.
Plumbing emergency and need immediate service? Call the professionals at Plumbers 911. 1-833-PLUM-911. Licensed and highly trained plumbers available 24/7. Call now and give $50 off your initial plumbing service. Plumbers 911. 1-833-PLUM-911.
Switch to Sprint and get our best unlimited deal ever. Four lines of unlimited for just $100 a month. Plus, we're including four amazing iPhone 11s on us when you trade in iPhone 6s or newer in any condition. Visit Sprint.com, call 800-SPRINT-1, or come see us in our stores. Phone after $29.17 per month credit for 18 months credit. Apply within 2 bills. If canceled early, remaining balance due. Requires new account. Unlimited basic after 7/31/21. Pay $35 per month per line with auto pay. Data deprioritization during congestion. Coverage and offer not available ever. Excludes taxes, fees, and roaming. Speed maximums, use rules. $30 activation fee and restrictions apply.
Kids, 1-877 cards for kids. Donate your car today.
1-877 cards for kids. KARS cards for kids. 1-877 cards for kids. Donate your car today.
To learn more about our programs and to donate, go to cardsforkids.com. That's cards with a K. Pickup is quick and easy. You'll also get a vacation voucher and maximum tax deduction.
1-877 cards for kids. KARS cards for kids. 1-877 cards for kids. Donate your car today.
Also accepting boats, motorcycles, RVs, and real estate donations.
You work hard for your money. You should be rewarded for that. That's why so many people are switching to Consumers Credit Union. Member-owned, Consumers offers tremendous advantages, like earning up to 5.09% APY for doing things you're likely already doing. Plus, you can use any ATM anywhere, and Consumers refunds the fees. It's no wonder Consumers Free Rewards Checking is recognized as one of the best high-yield checking accounts nationwide. Account qualifications apply. Signing up is a breeze at myconsumers.org. Consumers Credit Union, federally insured by NCUA.
Hi, I'm Ryan Kelly. Even in these uncertain times, the entire Home Loan Expert team is working day and night to ensure that our clients are getting their loans processed and closed at record speeds. Mortgage interest rates are sitting near all-time low levels, and we know how important that monthly savings is to you. Take 5 minutes today, and let's see how much money we can save you with our 5-minute loan approval, only available at thehomeloanexpert.com.
The Home Loan Expert LLC, NMLS number 1326241.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Plumbing emergency? Call the professionals at Plumbers 911. Available 24/7 at 1-833-PLUM-911. Plumbers 911 licensed professionals have 10,000 hours of training and get the job done right the first time. Call now. 1-833-PLUM-911.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Doctor's Log, Hell Date 2020. Right now, health and medical industries are feeling the pressure of the COVID-19 outbreak. Doctors are feeling that pressure. Nurses are feeling that pressure. I'm definitely feeling that pressure. And so I wanted to capture some of this journey. It's a log of this scary adventure we're all on together. I'm Esther Chu, MD, and this is my doctor's log. Go subscribe on radio.com and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Now the Blackhawks on the power play. Chelio scores! 7 seconds after the penalty to Roberts, Chicago takes the lead.
One thing about Chris Chelios, he will take what you give him. All of the good players do. Something that hasn't happened very often just happened. A goal went between Tom Barrasso's legs right through the five hole. So Chris Chelios took advantage of Ron Francis being down at the top of the penalty killing box, slipped by him, and has given Chicago a 1-0 lead.
That highlight courtesy NHL.com. The segment's brought to you by Amco Transmissions and Total Car Care. And at 8 p.m., Chicagoans come out to salute essential workers during their shift change. At 8 a.m., Amco Transmissions and Total Car Care opens to keep Chicagoans' transmissions shifting right. Call 1-800-GO-AMCO or search AAMCO for a location near you. Chris Chelios, the man that five-hole Tom Barrasso, is joining us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. It has to be interesting for you, Chris, to be experiencing this era of sports when people have got to remember there was another team in that building. How have you been doing?
Doing good. No, all things considered, I miss sports like everybody else. I'm really missing baseball and sitting out on those decks on the restaurants in Chicago. But with the weather, you're not sitting out on decks too often. But everything's going pretty good. Everybody's healthy.
It's always good, and you are we're mindful of this era of Chicago sports because of all the attention of The Last Dance. But what was it like for you sharing a building with something that was this big a force of nature?
I'll tell you what, like any fan, and obviously I was a fan and a close friend of MJ's, it was you look forward to going to the United Center or the Chicago Stadium all the time, running into those guys, the whole team, and the camaraderie we had, and the run we went on in 92 with them. It's a lot of fun, a lot of good times, in the United Center, and like I said, both buildings, and even just running into each other throughout the city. It was a great time for Chicago sports, Chicago fans.
So, Chris, if you had interactions, and I don't know how often both teams were home or how it happened, but did Blackhawks teams, did you interact with, well, you say you were a fan, but to what extent? I know that there were times where maybe some of the healthy scratches would be up there and some Bulls would be watching from there. What sort of interaction was there between these teams?
Well, off the, away from the rink, or, we'd go to a few of the same places. I'll mention one bar we used to go to a lot was that Martini Ranch. It's no longer there, but that was a place on the weekends if both teams were in town. We'd run into each other there quite a bit. And then MJ's restaurant, we frequented that quite a bit. But otherwise, not really a whole lot. Most of those guys were living up north. because of practice center, and we were mostly living out west or downtown. But again, we, you know, when we did run into each other, it was always nice and friendly, and made a lot of good friends on the Bulls.
I have no idea about what he's talking about, but moving on.
Yes, you do. You had to be there one of those.
But that's you talked line. About the relationship that you had with MJ. How did that develop? And was there ever any intimidation at the beginning because of who he was?
You know what? I didn't feel like it because I'd never really – it was my first year back, you know, in 91 when I got traded here, so to back to Chicago. But, no, we met at a White Sox game. I was with, you know, George. Obviously saw George a lot last night on the show, his right-hand guy, and he's also a great friend that and has been since 91. And, no, we, you know, I mean, ultimately, as time went on, I saw, you know, what he turned into and the championships and these larger than life. But, you know, things never changed with us. We always kept in touch. We did a lot of fun things together, went on a lot of trips together, and mostly Michael invited me with George. It was great.
Well, Chris, did you guys ever have conversations in your locker room about what was going on down the hall? So for reference to people that are listening, both the Blackhawks and the Bulls had to go down the same set of stairs. If you turned left, you went to the Bulls' locker room. If you turned right, you went to the Blackhawks' locker room. How much discussions did you guys have about, you know, what was going on with the Bulls at that time?
Well, both teams hated those damn stairs, going down those stairs and coming up those stairs. I know that. But, no, like I said, most of the time when you guys were playing – at home, we were the only time we would run into each other down, you know, around the, you know, the dressing rooms was when we were coming back from the practice facility at University of Circle. So, you know, just wishing them luck, and every once in a while we'd get on the court with them for the shoot around and play some scrimmages with the kids that were working at the old stadium. Those were some pretty vicious games. A couple times, you know, your guys, the Bulls, would play for a little bit, but they're afraid to get hurt because we didn't know the physicality you weren't allowed to hit in basketball. So they figured it was probably better, safer to stay off the court than go on there with us. But like I said, it was mostly just in, you know, small talk, nothing serious. The only time I would say that, you know, we really got involved where we were having that run in 92 and we saw each other so often because we were playing every other day, you know, at the United, especially at the old stadium.
Did you ever golf with Michael?
Yeah, but not very long. First of all, I'm not good. I don't really enjoy it. I guess that's one of the things I kind of regret. I probably should have got better at it because all the places that he goes, you know, all over the world, Ireland he's been, and I could have been part of that group. The amazing trips. But after a while, he wouldn't even let me play with him. I had to play in the foursome behind him because he takes it real serious. And I ended up playing with George all the time in the group behind him. So, but he's, like I said, no one, you don't have to say how competitive he was. And, you know, he liked to play with good players and made them better.
So, Chris, you brought it up, and I was gonna leave this out. But one of the things I used to remember was, because what people didn't realize is you guys had to come to the United Center, get dressed, or not the United Center, the old stadium, get dressed, hop in your car, drive over to UIC, practice, then drive back. And we had home games when you guys were here. You know, we kicked you over to the UIC because you couldn't skate on the ice because the floor was down. But I used to cut through and go down the stairs. And I used to watch you guys playing pickup games against the ball boys. Yeah. And the ball boys would come in and be like, my God, these guys don't understand the definition of a foul. And I'm like, what do you guys think? You're playing against hockey players. Did you guys play call your own and you never called a foul?
No, that was schoolyard ball. We just hammered them until they didn't want to play anymore. So it didn't matter how good they were, we beat them every time. So but that was, like, we put them on the floor. It was not purposely. It's just, you know, it's just the way we were. But it was a lot of fun, I tell you that.
We're sharing memories with Chris Chelios, Dan Burstein, alongside Will Perdue on our special Bulls Monday here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. How envious, honestly, how envious could the Blackhawks get of just the size and scope of what the Bulls meant. You know, we hear it from fans all the time. We hear hockey guys that resent the NBA. Why? The winter sport rivalry and the please love my sport people. But did you ever as a team think, hey, you know, we're pretty damn good too. We're making the playoffs. We're winning our division. Yet they're this massive global phenomenon, and you were a nice professional local sports story in a major market. Was that ever jarring to see sort of the differences in the amount of coverage and the size of the footprint?
No, not really. I mean, I was there from the beginning, you know, from the first championship to the last, and we were so envious. You know, it's not like we had the little brother syndrome. We, you know, the one, like I said, I keep referring to 92 because I can't, you know, it was just such a, you know, amazing time that, you know, 2-3 weeks that, you know, we were that little run going to the playoffs. We were 11 straight, set a record, you know, and then they were just on a roll also. And you feed off it. I mean, we were always kidding. Are you, you know, don't blow this, don't screw this up. You know, we're talking to the guys on the Bulls, and, you know, unfortunately we didn't finish, you know, the job, but it was still a hell of a run. And, you know, I think the guys, like even guys that were getting traded throughout that time, they, any chance they got to go to a Bulls game, they did. It was just the buzz and, you know, the feeling you get. And then of course getting to see the greatest player ever. And, you know, I look back and feel how lucky I was to, you know, I don't know the 60s in basketball. I don't know the 70s, but I sure as hell, you know, I know one thing, you know, we had something special when we got to watch those teams and Michael, what they did.
Chris, what did you take away from your relationship with Michael personally, but more so professionally because of what he was as far as the person, how competitive he was? Did that change anything about how you approached the game of hockey?
You know, I think when you're an athlete, and I think I had that competitiveness, you know, before I'd met Michael, but then to watch him and how hard he worked, I wanted to, obviously that phrase, you want to be like Mike. I did everything I saw him do or heard that he did, including eating chicken McNuggets. I didn't, you know, I did whatever he did. It was a superstition, and, you know, it's like having a teammate in the room that, you know, works his ass off, you know, and he leads the way, and that's what Michael did. And watching this show brings up great memories, and, you know, he wanted to destroy you. That's how bad. Like you said, win at all costs. You know, you look at his teammates, and I think, you know, they look back now, especially you, Wilt, you know, the championships, the memories, and how he made you a better player. You know, that's the ultimate leader. So he's, like I said, it's as a friend, it's been amazing. You know, he's loyal, and then the times we've had, and I think the, you know, when he came to my Hall of Fame induction, that was really special to have him and George there. That was, you know, it meant a lot to me.
There's a fascinating thread running throughout this as you're talking about basketball. You're talking about calling fouls and physicality and competitive drive, Chris. And to me, someone in hockey who is that intense and has to channel it through one's play rather than through violence, the unique athletic mind, because it would be easy for that to be uncontrolled. It would be easy for a hockey player to have that rage and take it out on somebody just by murdering them on the ice, just by attacking them physically because of what is actually allowed or accepted. So for someone like you, for someone who has this, if you're trying to find what he's got, a burning desire to always be great, to find the grudges, how do you make sure you channel that through quality of hockey rather than just physical violence?
Yeah, well, that's what, again, back to Michael, you watch these games, and he never actually get in confrontations. He, you know, a little trash talking, but he was able to control it. You know, never got rattled. Never, very seldom, should I say, got rattled or off his game. Whereas if you're talking about hockey, for me, you know, I was a pretty undisciplined player, and that's what Keenan, you know, that's what Daryl Sutter, that's the way we played an intimidating game, like similar to the Pistons when they were beating up on the Bulls. So not until I got to Detroit, you know, I turned into a more disciplined player, and it probably would have helped me if I did it earlier, but, you know, I didn't have it in me, and that was our makeup of our team in Chicago. So, you know, Michael was a very disciplined player, and he was a total package. You know, he had the competitiveness, he had the skill, obviously, to go with it, and you know, his mindset, he just had his temperament, you know, was perfect, and that's what made him the player that he was. But again, hockey's still the only sport that allows fighting. It's a little barbaric. I mean, I like it, but you know, it's pretty amazing they still allow it.
Well, Chris, who in your era that you had to play against would you best say has the most Michael Jordan qualities in hockey?
I'd say Mark Messier, because, you know, you mentioned the physical part of it. He could beat you with a goal. He could beat you with a hit, you know, turn the momentum of a game around with a big hit. He'd go after any player if he had to. And in the playoffs especially, he could turn it up another gear. And he had everything, you know. He's like watching a guy, you know, come in on a white horse, and you know, oh no, here he comes again. But he was a fierce competitor, a skill, and just physically, he was a big guy, 6'2", you know, and just, you know, absolutely mean when he had to be.
Chris, really appreciate the time and the insight, the stories. Best of luck to you. Thanks. Good health.
Thanks, you guys. All the best, everybody.
Thank you. That is Chris Chelios, the former Blackhawk, the Hockey Hall of Famer. That's it's good stuff. You know, well, I always am amazed by, you know, Jonathan Toews also is somebody who is one of these guys who's incredibly, intensely competitive and always knows where that edge is. Hell, you've been around basketball players that couldn't find out where that edge was.
No, and that's the hard part is knowing where to push yourself to where you don't go too far, whether it's emotionally or physically. But I will say this. I got a little chuckle at the end of the interview when he said, that guy was big. He was 6'2". Oh.
We're looking forward to having a conversation with Mark Schanowski of NBC Sports Chicago, Bulls analyst. You saw him in the very opening sequence. He was standing to the side when Jerry Krause was getting angry with what Craig Sager was asking him about backstabbing. And you turn as Krause walks off, you see Schanowski standing right there. Much younger, Mark Schanowski, but he's no less handsome. And he's going to join us next. We will talk to him. Will Perdue is sitting alongside today on our Last Dance Bulls Monday. A lot more to come, including Bill Cartwright at 11, Luke Kanellis at 11:20. We got some baseball news, too, that we're going to have to get to on the other side of Mark Schanowski. His baseball is pushing ahead with this. They are going to try to figure something out, even though they're not really in charge of any of this. And it looks to me like there's a bit of a money grab going on the part of the owners that the players might be wise to resist. We will be getting to that as we also talk about last night's two episodes of The Last Dance. 312-644-6767 is our number, and you're listening to The Score.
This is 670 The Score, Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station, period. Thanks for keeping us on top, Chicago.
The Chicago Window Guy is open during these difficult times to handle all of your window and door needs. So make the call that I did. Call Russ Armstrong. He's the owner of Chicago Window Guys, and they make and install all their own products. They offer a lifetime warranty on all parts and labor. I had a bunch of windows done and couldn't be happier with them. They're so much better than the ones that were originally in this house. And Russ realizes that these times are tough, so he's offering virtual appointments over the internet or over the phone. So call them. Call the Chicago Window Guys today, 847-881-3060, 847-881-3060. And the first 10 callers that mention my name, Dan, get 10% off the order. Check out his reviews at chicagowindowguy.com.
You work hard for your money. You should be rewarded for that. That's why so many people are switching to Consumers Credit Union. Member-owned, Consumers offers tremendous advantages, like earning up to 5.09% APY for doing things you're likely already doing. Plus, you can use any ATM anywhere, and Consumers refunds the fees. It's no wonder Consumers Free Rewards Checking is recognized as one of the best high-yield checking accounts nationwide. Account qualifications apply. Signing up is a breeze at myconsumers.org. Consumers Credit Union. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You can now see if you qualify for a medical marijuana card through a telemedicine appointment. Innovative Wellness can help, and they take insurance. Schedule an online visit with them today. Visit innovativemmj.com for more information. That's innovativemmj.com.